It is wonderful to be standing here and to find myself thanking the Caldecott Committee for honoring me with this medal. I do thank you all most gratefully. You have made an old workhorse in the field of children's books sublimely happy. The creation of most picture books for children is not dramatic. It is a matter of daily, patient, single-minded effort. It is a matter of writing some words on a page in a silent room. It is the soft sound of a pencil or a pen sweeping across a piece of drawing paper. To see a book appearing in front of one's eyes where before there was nothing is a pleasure and a joy. But this elation comes quietly. However, this was not true in the case of Fables, the book that is being honored here this evening. The conception and birth of Fables was a fable in itself, a saga with the ups and downs, the climaxes and anticlimaxes of a real plot. In March of 1977, I received a phone call from Charlotte Zolotow at Harper & Row. There was an idea for a book that I might be interested in doing. Would I like to come in and talk about it? Well, yes, I said, I certainly would. For a solitary, hermitic artist, the prospect of a business conference in a real office with memo pads and other important things of that nature was indeed an enticement. We quickly agreed on a date for our meeting. The appointed day turned out to be bright and sunny. The midtown skyscrapers of New York gleamed in the light of early spring. Charlotte and Pat Allen were waiting in Charlotte's plant-filled office when I arrived. They were smiling. I smiled back. I remember the occasion as a smiling morning full of promise. Their idea was then presented to me. How would I like to write some fresh new adaptations of a selection of Aesop's fables and illustrate them in full color? Immediately I decided that this sounded like a fine job for me. After all, I thought, were not the Frog and Toad stories that I had written fables of a sort in their way? Of course they were. A most agreeable advance was mentioned. I heard myself saying, "Yes, I think I would like to do it." Charlotte and Pat were delighted, and our smiling conference came to a happy end. Outside, on 53rd Street, in front of the Harper & Row building, I turned the corner of Fifth Avenue, feeling giddy with self-importance at having been summoned and actually commissioned to create a book. But, somewhere near the corner of 49th Street, I experienced a sudden sinking spell. I could not, with the exception of that fox and his bunch of sour grapes, I could not bring to mind a single fable of Aesop. Well, never mind, I thought as I made my way toward the subway. Never mind. Why spoil the moment? I'll think about it tomorrow. Tomorrows have a way of coming all too soon. Mine did. The hot and humid days of summer found me scavenging in bookstores and slouched in the corners of libraries. I was reading Aesop, a lot of Aesop. I was beginning to feel somewhat uncomfortable, and it was not only the weather. Children have fallen heir to the fables of Aesop because of the anthropomorphic use of animals therein. I soon realized that these fables were not originally created for children at all. There were no children as we know them in Aesop's time. There were only younger and smaller Greeks. I found dogs tearing sheep into pieces. I found snakes strangling ravens. I found deer being chewed to bits by lions. I came upon harsh cruelties and bitter ironies of every sort. The adaptations that I was reading were heavily laden with the cautionary moralism of the 19th century. Surely it was very interesting, but it was a far cry from Frog and Toad. Perhaps this commission was not for me after all. Summer gave way to autumn. The late afternoons were growing darker, and so was my mood. One morning I stared at myself in the mirror while shaving and said, "No, Lobel, no. Admit it. You do not want to do this book." The man in that mirror was giving me such a direct, penetrating look. I could only agree that he was speaking the truth. I would have to call Charlotte and make an appointment to tell her the bad news. I am probably being too subjective, but I think the day of this meeting was gray and overcast. I slunk into the office and sadly delivered my message. Naturally, Pat and Charlotte were disappointed, and I was ashamed at having caused them to feel that way. They were both aware of my sense of failure and offered kind words of comfort and encouragement. As I left the office, I turned on the threshold and, in order to end a gloomy meeting on a note of optimism, I said, "Maybe I can write some fables of my own. Who knows?" Pat and Charlotte smiled weakly, and we said goodbye. Downstairs, on the corner of 53rd and 5th, I said to myself, "Idiot, why on earth did you say that?" I wondered if it sounded like a promise. I hoped not. The months went by. Other days, other books. I was busy with several projects. The winter of 78 was a stern one in New York, an abundance of cold and snow. One day in late January, our telephone went dead. It happens all the time, old equipment in Brooklyn. The phone company tells us that the squirrels, driven to desperate measures by the sparseness of the winter food supply, dine hungrily upon our telephone wires, causing broken lines and interruption of service. This proves that even large corporations can invent fables, but I was not amused. For reasons that I will never understand, I ran coatless into the freezing street and down to the telephone booth at the corner to report the outage. The lady who answered at the telephone repair service was not being cooperative. She was doing her job ever so slowly, carefully taking my name and address and phone number. "What is the problem?" she asked again. "Dead," I shouted. "The phone is dead." I jumped up and down to warm myself on that frigid street corner. I was frozen to the bone. I slammed the receiver down and ran the half block to my house at top speed. It was as I was just approaching my front stoop that my right foot met the little patch of ice on the sidewalk. There was a snapping sound, a great pain, followed by an ominous numbness. I hobbled into the house, fearing the worst. That evening, after a trip to the emergency ward of our local hospital, all my fears were confirmed. I was crutched and plaster casted. The diagnosis? A small broken bone below the ankle. The sentence? 5 weeks of confinement. Now I must interrupt my story to tell you that I do not particularly love the act of writing. As much as I enjoy drawing, the thought of sitting in a chair with an open notebook on my lap, waiting for nothing to happen, is not my idea of fun. I know that it is my fate to write my own stories, and that often, by the grace of the muse, these stories have turned out well. But in fact, when faced with the prospect of having an hour that could be available for writing the text of a picture book, I have become a master procrastinator. In order to protect myself from the lifeless, sharpened pencil, the empty blue lines on the page, I will run, I will escape. Any excuse will do. Now there was no excuse. Even if I were to throw all caution to the winter wind and stumble out of the house into the afternoon, the first 5-foot snowbank would have stopped me cold. I was trapped. There was nothing to do but face the music and write. What about those fables that I had so rashly mentioned at Harper? Why not give them a try? I thought of some of my favorite animals that I've always loved, but never managed to fit into the scheme of my books. The ostrich, the hippo, the crocodile, and the kangaroo, wonderful, precious creatures all. I put them down on a list. Day by day, to my great surprise, they told me their stories, and I wrote them. For once, the pages of my notebook were not empty. Anita went off to dance class every day. She would return in the early evening and asked in hushed tones, "Did you write another one?" My exuberant answer would almost always be, "Yes, I did," and then I would read her my latest effort. I thank her for her approval and support. I also thank her for her very good nursing. In a month's time, I was a movable biped again. In a great passion, I rushed to do the pictures, for as wary as I am of writing, I do love to draw. I chose to do my first drawings as color paintings instead of the black and white pencil sketches that I usually make. The camel wearing a tutu, the pig floating through a dreamlike cosmos, the baboon clutching his ventilated umbrella, these images clicked into being. In no time at all, I had a preliminary dummy, stories and pictures all pasted neatly into place. It was ready to be presented to Harper. I thought the book was damned good, but how hard it is to be objective about one's own work. Perhaps I was very wrong. There are always the doubts. Bringing a new project into a publisher is a jittery, suspenseful experience. This time was no exception. I waited until I knew that my editor, Liz Gordon, was out on her lunch hour. I crept into Harper and Row. I slipped the dummy onto her desk and hurried off. Carefully, I elected to do this on a Friday so that I could at least have a weekend of rest before waiting for the phone to ring or not to ring on Monday. On the very next day, however, I was attending a small party given by the editor of another publishing house. To my horror, I saw Charlotte coming through the door. She had also been invited. Had she already seen the Fables? Had she passed judgment on it? What if she hated it? I wanted to hide, but I knew that it would look silly if I jumped behind a sofa. Charlotte spotted me at once and moved quickly toward me across the room. She was smiling broadly. It was the same bright smile that I had seen in her office a year before. I think it was the nicest smile that I have ever seen. I knew right then that I was an official fabulist. Mercifully, you will be relieved to hear, the later progress of Fables followed a smoother course. I thank Liz Gordon for helping me to tighten and polish my text, and I am grateful for her endless patience with all of my compulsive last-minute word changes. I thank Kohar Alexanian, my designer, for somehow being able to read my mind's eye and to find the exact typeface that I could see in my head on the very first try. I thank her also for spending those endless hours and days at the printing plant with me while Fables was on the press. I've been making books for children for a very long time. It has been 21 years since that rainy morning when I first came into Harper and Brothers to show my portfolio to Susan Hirschman. It was she who hung me up to dry and, to my astonishment, handed me my first manuscript to illustrate. So, in addition to again expressing my thanks to the committee, I wish to end with an appropriate literary quotation that I have found. By no coincidence at all, it has been taken from my own Fables. This evening, I know that wishes on their way to coming true will not be rushed. Thank you all so much.